supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Prince would be pleased. Astronomers announced the discovery of a potentially purple planet. Let's take a trip with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, tell me more.
I'm constantly fascinated by the great variation in composition of extrasolar planets that are being identified by various satellites that are sort of looking around to see what's out there, scouting around the rest of the galaxy. And the Kepler spacecraft that we have spoken of numerous times has done a great job of collecting these. One of them comes from a particular star system, the WASP star system 104, and the second one of the planets in that star system of WASP 104, WASP 104b, turns out to be a really interesting hot Jupiter-type planet. This is the type of planet that's about the size of Jupiter, a gas giant. In this case, it's a little bit bigger than Jupiter, but it happens to be very close to the star, so it's called a hot Jupiter. As it turns out, the composition of the planet renders it to potentially appear purple in nature. But that's not the most exciting part of this. The most exciting part is that because of the chemical composition of the upper atmosphere of this planet, 95 to 99% of the light that it receives from the star is absorbed. So it turns out to be an incredibly dark object, a little bit larger than Jupiter, but very close to its own star, which, of course, is wildly unusual.
So that almost all of the light from its star is absorbed. Is it just that little bit of light that comes off of it that lends the purplish hue?
Yes, it is. That's because of the composition. Because of the composition of the upper atmosphere, in this case we're talking about potassium and sodium, that's what astronomers think would give it this color of purple.
Our Jupiter, you wouldn't use that descriptive hot because it's not in the same proximity to our sun.
Not in the least. Our planet Jupiter is at an incredible distance away, some 400 million miles out from the sun. And because of that distance, it's in a portion of the solar system that's on the cold side, like several hundred degrees below zero easily. So in this case, what happens is that the hydrocarbon atmosphere that's there is made up mostly of frozen ice crystals. And those frozen ice crystals are what lend the ability to the planet to be so brilliant in our evening skies as we see it, because those ice crystals of the hydrogen, helium, ammonia, and methane are reflecting a tremendous amount of light.
Derek, coming back home, let's bid adieu to April. Tomorrow is May Day, May Day. What does May Day mean?
Well, in that particular case, it means help, help, help. It comes from the French word May Day, which means help. But May Day, as we're thinking of it, the astronomical term is a cross-quarter day, halfway between the first day of spring, first day of summer. However, this particular day has other connotations for other cultures. If any of us, and I'm sure many of us are, familiar with Shakespeare's great play, A Midsummer Night's Dream, we know that that play takes place around the middle of June. Well, that's not midsummer for us. That's really what we consider to be the beginning of summer. However, in many northern European cultures, that's considered the middle of summer, May 1st being the beginning of summer. So earlier this month, we were gaining minutes of daylight at the rate of 2 minutes 40 seconds a day almost. But once we get into June, that rate will dwindle dramatically until, as we roll up to the third week of June, it's down to just seconds a day that we're gaining, coming to a close of gain on June 21st.
I'm not ready to consider those implications just yet. Let's instead merely glance ahead to the calendar this coming Saturday, an anniversary of note.
Yes, it's the 57th anniversary of Alan Shepard's historic suborbital flight. It came just 3 weeks after Yuri Gagarin's first flight as a human in space. He orbited the Earth, so he was way ahead of what the Americans were doing at the time. But we were just close enough in our technical capability to be able to get a man into space, even though it was suborbital, that kept us in the race and began to build our momentum towards gaining that high ground foothold on the moon.
We have a moment left. With clear, dark skies, what's available to be seen overhead this week?
Well, Venus definitely shows itself as the evening star for sure. Brilliant in the evening sky after sunset. It's up until after 9 p.m. easily, so you can't miss it. Saturn rises just after midnight now, with Mars following an hour later. But this places the three brightest objects, Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars, stretched across the southern sky at 5 a.m. in the morning this week. Now, a really cool thing is that during this week, the moon slides through that group from tomorrow morning all the way through Sunday morning. So if you happen to be up at the 5 a.m. hour, you'll be able to watch the moon day by day as it trips along among those three bright planets.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.